All right, Sliwa After Dark, the Sliwa Show, whatever Mason wants to call it, that's what I'm going to run with. Appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock tonight. Got a great show lined up. Of course, we're going to talk a lot of Los Angeles Lakers basketball. I want to get Laker fans' thoughts on this. Is Kuzma way too one-dimensional? So we'll hit on that. We'll obviously talk about the Lakers' upcoming schedule. Dodgers baseball, 4-2 in spring training. They lost earlier today 6-5 to the Milwaukee Brewers. Kershaw and Alex Wood did pitch today. Tim Kirchen had some phenomenal compliments to the Los Angeles Dodgers, so we'll play those pieces a little bit later. And then I want to get a little bit better of an idea of what's going on with the collective bargaining agreement with the NFL. So Kirk Morrison will hop on, and Dave Denholm will preview the LAFC season, which starts on Sunday. All right, let's do this. Lakers beat the Golden State Warriors yesterday. Not a surprise. You're supposed to beat the Warriors. You're supposed to smash the Warriors. Lakers win by 30, and it was nice to see them do it. This was probably my favorite stat of last night from the Lakers' victory. A 30-point win with LeBron James not playing and Anthony Davis playing just 25 minutes. Again, I'm going to go back to this. It's no surprise. It's no shock. Absolutely. That's what the Lakers are supposed to do. But it's one thing to talk about it. It's one thing to see it on paper. It's another thing to go out there and perform. They outscored Golden State yesterday 40-17 in the third quarter, and they outscored them 62-34 in the second half. Draymond Green had an early exit, got two quick technical fouls, probably was home before the game ended. So the Lakers handled what they had to handle. And there's been, I think, a lot of chatter today, and I think it's a great topic, and I think it's a great conversation. Kuzma yesterday had 18 points for the Lakers, shot 8-17 from the field. Felt more comfortable yesterday in his role. Still came off the bench. Maybe the difference is Rondo was in the starting lineup. Maybe, obviously, the difference, he's going to get more touches. He's going to play more minutes. There's a lot of things that come to Kyle Kuzma when LeBron James isn't going to play in a game. Lakers are going to depend more on Kuz from an offensive perspective. So no shock or surprise there. The one thing I'll say is this. Seeing Kyle Kuzma thrive if AD's not there, or if LeBron's not there, or if both of those players aren't there, doesn't really do something for me. And when I say for me, really what I'm referring to is just watching the Lakers as a whole. It's great that he can have good games when one of those two guys are not there, or it's great that he can feel a lot more natural and, you know, he gets more looks. He's more of the focal point. That's all great and dandy. I don't want to say it's irrelevant, but it's kind of irrelevant, because really what it's going to come down to for Kuz is doing it when LeBron is there and when Anthony Davis is there, because that's all that's going to matter. When we get to the postseason, and not even just the postseason, let's not jump ahead too far, 25 games left on the year, it's extremely important that Kuzma finds ways to be effective when he's on the basketball court. And it's not just putting up points, and it's not just scoring. So when I heard some of the conversation in the chatter today about, all right, well, Kuzma's had some nice games without LeBron. Here's Kuzma's stats when LeBron doesn't play, or here's some stats when he's in the small forward position, which actually I think there's I think there is some truth there, and maybe Kuz in that small forward position as the season progresses, because Markieff Morris is at playing the four, is at power forward. Kuz may be a more natural three. There could be some benefits that come out of this for Kyle Kuzma. But I'm also going to say this. This is not a roster and a team that's built to accommodate Kyle Kuzma. Kyle Kuzma has to figure out how to play with the team that's already there. He has to figure out how to play with LBJ and with Anthony Davis. This Lakers team's not going to accommodate to Kyle Kuzma. They can't. It doesn't make sense. Anthony Davis and LeBron James, we know just how effective they are for the Lakers. By far the best players, not just on this team, but two of the top five players in the league. Kuzma is a role player. He's a role player. When there was chatter this summer about Kuzma being the third star and people saying, you don't need to go out there and give money to another player. No, no, you already got it with Kyle Kuzma. Frankly, I didn't know what they were talking about. And that's not, it's not a knock on Kyle Kuzma. Do you know how good Anthony Davis and LeBron James are? Do you understand how good those two players are? AD's going to win Defensive Player of the Year this year. LeBron James, in my opinion, is the most valuable player in the NBA, still at age 35, 17 years into the league. So it's a predicament where Kyle Kuzma has to fit into what the Lakers already got. There are many ways to be effective on a basketball court. You want to know why I love Alex Caruso and you love Alex Caruso and LA loves Alex Caruso? Is because he finds ways to be effective on the basketball floor. All right, maybe he's going to give you 8 to 10 points a night. Maybe he'll have a game where he gets 4 to 6, 7 assists. Maybe he'll have 2 steals. Maybe he'll have 1. Maybe he'll have none. But when Caruso's on the floor, he does exactly what a role player does. Finds ways to be effective. Knows his exact role. You want to know why I love KCP? Why you like KCP? Why Laker fans love KCP? They love him because when he's on the floor, he's doing all the little things that you need to make that run towards an NBA championship. I keep going down the list. Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard this year has been unbelievable for the Lakers. And it's Dwight Howard blocking shots, grabbing rebounds, getting some tip-ins, getting to the free throw line. All these small things that add up. Looking at Kuz so far this season, this is the one thing I see about Kuz. He's too one-dimensional. If the only way we talk about Kuz having a good game is because of what he did on the offensive end and how many points he had, then Kuz is doing himself a disservice. There are so many more aspects to the game. And this Lakers team, they're not in a spot right now where you have to get, you need X amount of points coming from Kuzma every single night. No, we just need him to be effective. By the way, that might be one night Kuzma gets in the game and he gives you 20 points. And it is extremely helpful and it helps you win a basketball game. That's great. But if that comes every once every 5 games or 7 games, or the predicament, the situation for Kuz is different than it was a year ago, we can't expect big points from Kuzma because he's playing 10 less minutes. Anthony Davis is now on the floor. He's backing up AD. He's taking less shots. I get all that. Like, I'm not against Kuzma when it comes to all that. But when you're on the floor, you got to do something effective. This is what I think hurts Kyle Kuzma. He's too one-dimensional. I wish, I was telling Ramona during one of the breaks, I was telling her, I said, Ramona, if Kuz had a game where he had 8 points and he had 8 rebounds and he had 2 steals and he had 4 assists, he might get a standing ovation at Staples Center. And I'm not saying that joking around, and part of me is joking around, but the point I'm making is Laker fans will appreciate everything he does, but it doesn't just have to be scoring. You don't have to show your impact on a basketball court just by scoring. I'm not a fan of, you know, when Chris Bosh went to Miami and played with LeBron, or when Kevin Love did this and he went to from Minnesota to the Cavs and he's playing with LeBron James. Cannot make those comparisons to Kyle Kuzma. Do you know what those two players were before they started playing with LeBron? They were all-stars. They were 7 seasons in the league or 6 seasons in the league by the time they started playing with Kuz. I want to emphasize this. This is not a knock on Kuz. This is just the reality, my perception of what I see on the basketball floor. If I ask anybody out there, what are Kuz's strengths? 9 people out of 10 are going to say, oh yeah, his scoring. What I'm trying to say is he's too one-dimensional. There's going to be many games, 25 games from now, we're in the postseason, and there's going to be many moments, predicaments, and situations where the question's going to be, who should be in the game right now? Should it be Markieff Morris? Should it be KCP? Should it be Danny Green? Should it be Alex Caruso? Should it be Kyle Kuzma? And I think what it's going to come down to is who's most effective when they're on the court. Who can do more than one thing? I'll ask Laker fans when we come back. Do you agree or disagree? Is Kyle Kuzma too one-dimensional? 877-710-ESPN. This is the Sliwa Show on 710-ESPN. Look, Lakers are rolling. 45-12. Have won 7 games in a row. we know the Denver Nuggets and the Clippers, the two teams right behind the Lakers in the Western Conference. Denver sitting at the number two slot, Clippers sitting at the number three slot. We know what's going to go on across the street. Whatever the result is, Lakers are only going to increase their lead in the Western Conference. I guess if Denver wins, they won't. But the Lakers have just played. To be in this position that the Lakers are in, it's unbelievable. It really is. Think about the last couple of seasons where the Lakers were. And now all of a sudden we're talking about the Lakers. I was making this last couple of shows. I talked about, can we lock up the Western Conference by April 1st? Think about that for a second. Think about how many wins the Lakers have had over the last few years. Think about 6 years not making the playoffs in a row. And here I am putting my chest out talking about, can we just lock up the West by April 1st? Is that fine with everybody? Is that okay to just call it a day by April 1st so then we can pick and choose how to use LeBron and use Anthony Davis and some of these other players? The conversation started on Kuzma because I feel like I don't want it to come off as I'm against Kuzma. I don't want it to come off as I don't believe in Kuzma. But the way it should come off is Kuzma right now really just does one thing on the basketball court, and it's supposed to be scoring. And even that scoring that he does, it's not on a consistent basis. What I'm saying is Kuzma, he's too good of a player, and he's on a team that they don't need just scoring. There's other things that we could look at. How great would it be by the time playoffs start and say, man, you know what? Kuzma's dropping 4 or 5 assists a game. Or Kuzma's getting a couple offensive block or getting a couple charges each and every game. Or he's hitting the glass and getting 8, 9 rebounds, 7 rebounds, whatever the case is. I just don't see that enough on his stat line. And this is a team right now that's built to obviously win today. This is a team right now that doesn't have a window to say, well, look, we have a 3-4 year window, and if it doesn't happen this year, we got chances coming up down the road. No, we don't have that. Kuzma's a role player. Let's all remind ourselves what he is. He's a role player. That doesn't mean that he can't become an all-star down the road. That doesn't mean that if he was on a team right now that had 20 wins, he wouldn't be averaging 20 points a game, but he's not. He's on the Lakers. The Lakers got a shot to win an NBA championship. He's not Anthony Davis. He's not LeBron James. So what does that mean after those two players? Every single player on this roster, after LBJ and after AD, they're role players. That's exactly what they are. They're role players. And Kuzma is a role player. He needs to be a more effective role player. And it doesn't just all have to be by scoring. His skill set, his age, his size. There's a lot of things Kuz should be doing. And it doesn't have to be. I hate to look at Kuzma's stat line and be like, all right, he had a good game because he scored 15 points, or he had a bad game because he scored 7 points. It shouldn't just be determined on how many points he scores a game. Caruso, how many different times have we looked at a box score? I do the post-game show, every post-game show, right? And every time I do the post-game, there's a lot of times I look at the box score and I'm talking about Caruso and saying, yeah, this doesn't justify his impact. But I'm talking positively about Alex Caruso because of all those little things that he's doing. Kuz, at this point of his career, is still just too one-dimensional for me. I feel like there's more that Kuz can do, and it doesn't have to be all points. We'll take your guys' calls right now. 877-710-ESPN. Let's start with Charles in L.A. Charles, you're on the Sliwa Show. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I disagree fervently with you.
Okay.
Especially in the last a few weeks, couple of months. He's improving in his defense. Even Vogel has said this repeatedly. He's improving his defense. He's getting more rebounds consistently. And he still scores more points than Caruso does. Caruso's great, but Caruso looks more intense. He's intense. But Kuzma's intense. He just looks more like that, you know, I don't know,
Charles, do you think he's been more effective than Caruso on the court the last, month?
I think they're really complimented each other. I think Caruso's gotten much better in the last couple of months too. But they're part of the reason, both of them, why we're 45-12. Yes, Kuzma can do better, but except for the first 2 months when he was coming back from the injury and then re-injured, he's been getting better and better.
Charles, do you hear my point? Charles, just get me on this. Do you hear my point that it's not
important?
It's not just all coming down to points. That's the point I make about Kyle Kuzma. What I'm saying is, I don't really care how many points he scores. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but he's not too one-dimensional. You know what I was watching last night? You know how many times I saw him make the first pass out of a two-pass point?
Great.
Basket?
That's fantastic, Charles. And hopefully he's doing that when LeBron and AD are both on the court or they're both playing. I know his numbers are going to go up when LeBron and AD are out. Of course. Or one of those two guys are out. Of course they are. Somebody has to pick up the slack. And he has that capability of doing it. My concern is not what Kuzma does when one of those two players are out. What I'm saying is when both of those guys are playing, he has to figure out how to adjust to LeBron and AD. The team's not going to adjust to Kyle Kuzma. It's just the reality. Charles, I'm not saying he's not getting better. What I'm saying is he's got to find other ways to be effective other than just scoring. If the only time we talk about Kuz is just when he's scoring, I feel like Kuzma's doing himself a disservice. He's 6'8", 6'9", could spread the floor. He's athletic. Kuz should be doing more than just scoring. Danny in Anaheim, you're on the Sliwa Show. Go ahead, Danny.
Hey, Alex. So for me, I kind of 2 points that you've brought up. One is in terms of Kuzma, I'm hopeful the way it sounds like that you are, but to me, like, one-dimensional is not the word I would use. Just because he is inconsistent, and I know you said that, but to me, like, and I'm not about the point thing, but the points, but I just don't see it. Like, I don't think Kyle Kuzma's ceiling is as high as people may think it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a team where we have two really good players and a whole bunch of role players. And I guess to that second point, like, come down the playoff, for me, I know that AD and LeBron will definitely be in that lineup. And then from there, Vogel will have to kind of seal out the team, figure out who's playing well that night.
Of course.
And it might be KCP. It might be Green. It might be Rondo.
It might be Markieff Morris. It might be Caruso. It might be Kuzma.
And it might be Kuzma.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that – and it's unfortunate. Like, I think – we all, as Laker fans, hope that Kuzma could be that part of that big three. But I'll be honest. Like, I just don't see it.
I'll go a step further, Danny, and I appreciate you calling in. It's not even close. Like, we should 100% not have a conversation anywhere close to calling this a big three. There ain't no big three. It's the big two, and it's not even close. And again, that's just how good. Do you know how good Anthony Davis is? Do you know how good LeBron James is? AD had a game after the Pelicans. He went 6 of 21. 6 of 21. He had 6 block shots and 14 rebounds. LeBron's last game, he had 40 points. He's 35 years old. It comes down to this. For Kyle Kuzma, it's not all about scoring. It's about just finding ways to be effective. By the way, you know the biggest thing that hurts Kyle Kuzma? You know the worst thing that hurts Kyle Kuzma? I'll tell you coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. I appreciate everybody that's called in so far. By the way, look, I think there's going to be a lot of people that disagree with me on this when I say that Kuz is one-dimensional. It's just my observation. So if you want to hop on and tell me that you disagree, just give me your reasons why. Give me your points why. 877-710-ESPN. The biggest thing that hurts Kyle Kuzma, the thing that hurts him the most more than anything else, it's just his third year in the NBA. So he's trying to figure all this out on the fly. It's not like you can look back and say, man, I've been in the league now for 6, 7, 8 years. I know what it is. By the way, he also is playing for the first time. This is the first season with Anthony Davis and LeBron. Think about last year, the dynamic that was set up. It was all young players. Yeah, LeBron James was LeBron, but Kuzma still got a lot of his opportunities. Anthony Davis, a power forward in the league. Kuz has been playing predominantly power forward for the Lakers, and he's doing it off the bench. He's following up the best power forward in the NBA. So with that in mind, it's an incredible adjustment for Kuz. With that in mind, it's a difficult circumstance for Kuz. But at the same time, he's got a chance to win an NBA championship. And the point that I'm making is I think it's better for his career to stop depending on just being a scorer. The more he could do these small things, these other things, the more he's going to see himself on the court in critical situations, the more he's going to see himself with big-time minutes, and I think the more it just takes his game to another level. There's something, too, in the game of basketball, grabbing a couple rebounds, a couple steals, a block shot, taking a charge that actually helps your game, helps your rhythm, helps your confidence. But I think as of right now, my thoughts on Kyle Kuzma, 2 one-dimensional. And I don't know how quick that can change. Maybe it's not going to change this year, whatever the case is. Or maybe it's just small little improvements as the rest of the season goes on. But there's other ways to affect a game. It's not all about scoring. And hopefully Kuzma, as the season progresses, gets a little bit closer to that, because there's going to be many predicaments this year where we can use somebody with the skill set of Kyle Kuzma, but you got to be doing the other things as well. Peter in Northern California, appreciate you calling in. Go ahead, bud. You're on the Sliwa Show. Go ahead, Peter.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. So I think that one thing that is kind of misconception is that what's wrong with him being one-dimensional, right? Like it kind of depends on what you're asking of him. Him playing with LeBron and AD is one thing, but if him coming off as a sixth man, that's another thing, right? If you look at Lou Williams, mm-hmm. you know, all the good sixth men, they're primarily scorers. They play okay defense, they do other things, but they're supposed to be that spark off the bench. And I think that the thing that's hurting Kuzma the most is actually playing with Rajon Rondo, because bottom line is that with all these sixth men, the offense flows through them first. They create systems that allow them to know that they're going to touch the ball. Versus Rondo, he's handling the ball, he dribbles a lot, and then he goes for the home run passes a lot. And I think that Kuzma doesn't know when he's going to get the ball, and that affects his game. Like yesterday, whenever he starts or whenever he gets more minutes, he knows he's getting the ball, and he plays a little bit more relaxed, right? And that's where I think that...
Peter, I think there's something to that. Peter, I think I agree with you that Rondo and Kuzma is not going to be the best fit. By the way, Rondo's a vet, been in the league for a long time. Like, maybe Rondo's mentality of the game is completely different. And the thing that I want to continue to harp on, the only point I'm trying to make is there's a lot more aspects to the game than just scoring. And Kuz is a 6'9" athletic wing in the league. And I know it's just his third season. I feel like he can do more than just scoring. And the point that you make is, well, no, you can be a one-dimensional player in the NBA. Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford, Spencer Dinwiddie, maybe you want to throw out there, guys that have kind of come in and they can give you 15, 17 points. But let's say Kuz was doing that off the bench consistently this year. Maybe it's a different conversation, but because it's not happening, that's why I'm saying, okay, well, if it's not scoring, can you do some of these other smaller things?
Well, it kind of depends on who you're talking about he's going up against, right? Like, if you think about, I think it was Harden or Westbrook. He had a good defensive game against that. He's had some bad defensive games against bigger guys and maybe some of the more small athletic guys. But, yeah, is he the best defender? No. But, you know, he's solid enough. He stays in front of you. He does have a weight disadvantage. I mean, he's kind of this middle man size where they're asking him to either play power forward. A little bit too small for that, right? To be very honest about
it. And small forward might be the best fit for him. And I think Markieff Morris coming to the Lakers probably puts Kuz in a more natural position.
Yeah, and then, you know, like if you think about it, during the playoffs, you're going to want him to be ready to guard the Harden, be that second or third guy, because, you know, The problem with the Lakers is that their guards are too small to guard the good elite guards. Like KCP does well, wish he could be a little more active with his hands. Sometimes he gets a little bit stiff for my taste. But, you know, overall, the problem with our guards, KCP and whatnot, is that they're too small to guard
They're just small enough. Yeah, they're literally just small enough. Peter, I want to grab a couple more phone calls. Thanks for calling in. 877-710-ESPN. G on the 405 freeway. You're on 710 ESPN. Go ahead, bud. Go ahead, G. You're on.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with what you're saying. Originally, in the summer, Kuz was going to work on his defense. That was his priority. And I think he needs to play along the lines of the rhythm of the game. What is the game offering you? Like you say, you know, there's many ways that you can contribute for them, especially coming off as the second squad.
Mm-hmm. And G, just to add to that, like, that's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is I want to see Kuz in major minutes. I want to see Kuz in these critical situations. But if it's not there yet, and if he's not further, you know, if he doesn't have the experience yet, that's very, that could be very realistic. If that is the case, and you're not putting up big time points, and you're not doing all those small things, it is going to hurt his chances of playing in critical minutes come postseason, just because he probably doesn't have enough experience.
I disagree with the experience coming from a 4-year college. And also having 3 years under your belt in the league, he's a lot more seasoned than a lot of these other kids that are coming into the league. And I think that he gets a little too happy when he comes in and his hands are already in the ready position to get the ball. As soon as he gets the ball, he'll put up not necessarily a high percentage shot. Sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't. So if he can, like you say, come in, maybe call the guy over, do a screen, you know, move around, you know, because the defenses know that he's going to come in and he wants to score. But if he can do other things along those lines, like you said, definitely he would get a lot more minutes and he would be put in critical situations.
G, appreciate you calling in. One more quick call. Douglas in Inglewood, you're on 710 ESPN. Make it quick, Doug. Go ahead, bud.
Yeah, I think that Kuz gets a single focus during the game. He decides, I'm going to play defense, and that's all he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's had games where he's rebounded maybe 10, 12, 13 rebounds.
He had a three-game there was a three-game span. Two of those games, I think he had over 10 rebounds.
Right, and that was his only focus for that game.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are other games where he's going to try to get assists. And so I don't think he's one-dimensional. I just think he's only able to focus on one thing. And it just shifts every game, depending on the matchup.
Appreciate you calling in, Douglas. More of your guys' phone calls. Phone number is 877-710-ESPN. I think Kuz is too one-dimensional. You can agree. You can disagree. More of your guys' calls coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, Mike Bresnahan with Spectrum Sportsnet sent out a tweet. Danny Green doubtful for Saturday's game at Memphis because of a sore right hip. LeBron James questionable because of a sore groin that kept him out of last night's game. Lakers won by 30 yesterday. They're 45-12 on the season. They've won 7 games in a row. They have a 7-game advantage in the loss column against the Denver Nuggets. They have an 8-game advantage in the loss column over the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers and the Nuggets will be facing off 7:30 across the street at Staples Center, so that should actually be a good game. We'll keep you guys posted as that game progresses. We'll get you guys scores and everything else. Milwaukee's pretty good. They have 50 wins on the year. They're up 130-79 over the Oklahoma City Thunder. All right, couple quick calls, and then I want to play Jared Dudley Inside the Green Room. That's the podcast that Danny Green does, talking specifically about Kuzma. Let's go to Ron in Long Beach. Ron, you're on 710 ESPN. Go ahead, bud.
Yeah, man. I can respect your opinion. I do think you and a lot of other fans are just a little far outside of what the reality is, which is what Frank Vogel is asking of Kuzma. This team is a lot deeper than what we're giving them credit for. If Frank wanted him to really step up in a Chris Bosh, Kevin Love-esque way, Kuzma can do that. Now, as far as you saying he's one-dimensional, I don't think we're looking at the fact action doesn't always come his way. And when it does, he's put his body on the line for a charge. He's gotten those rebounds. If he plays with the starters, he makes better passes. Why? He has better finishes. Rondo is amazing, man. You got to give him the ball just because it helps Kuzma slow down a little bit, giving Rondo the ball. We all know Kuzma has a motor. Most guys like that turn into better defensive players because that motor doesn't just cut off on one side of the floor. So just give him a little time. And within this role, this scheme, you know, we have a lot of guys that can do a lot.
And Ron, I'm not disagreeing with that, Ron. What I'm saying is that there are too many games where I hate to look at just how many points does somebody score, right? Like, that never tells the full story, especially in a game where there's five guys on the court at the same time. You're not playing golf. You're not playing tennis. This is not an individual sport. And for Kuzma, I feel like there's a lot of times, and I appreciate you calling in, I feel like there's a lot of times where we do look at Kuz for just that. And the point that I'm making is there's a lot more to the game than just scoring. And if Caruso is able to do all these small things, and Dwight Howard and KCP, and I'm not giving Danny Green a free pass. I don't think Danny Green has played maybe to the level that we thought walking into the season. And I'll preface all this by saying Lakers are 45-12 and have an incredible lead in the Western Conference. So maybe I'm complaining about nothing. But I just believe that Kuz has a skill set that's better than he's shown so far, and it doesn't just have to be offensively. Jared Dudley inside the green room.
Now you're limited on sometimes he plays them at the three, sometimes we go small ball, but it's never, like if Danny said, a consistent flow, because let's say Anthony Davis plays 12 minutes and has 12 points. It's hard to get in that flow, and we're throwing the ball to him in the post. He demands a double. So for what Kyle has done tremendously the last, if anybody watches this film, the last 10 games, his rebounding is up almost double. He is crashing the boards. He's rebounding it. He's done playmaking. He's actually playmaking a lot better than he was. Now he's turning the ball over a little bit more, but it's a give or take. Oh, hey, we want to improve this before the playoffs. He's 25 games. Defensively, he's been so much better.
So Dud completely probably disagrees with me. Dud saying that he's starting to do all those small things. Maybe for me, I just, on a consistent basis, you don't feel like you see it. Maybe I'm too hard on Kyle Kuzma. But I feel like the point that I'm making is fair. I think it's fair to say Kuz doesn't got to be all about scoring. It definitely doesn't have to be one of those things where we just look at your stat line and say, are you scoring enough or are you not? Just want him to be effective. Because Markieff Morris being on this team and, you know, kind of just continuing to add to the Lakers' depth, you got 11 guys now that 11 guys played against the Pelicans. Kuzma and Rondo played the least at 12 minutes. You're going to have a ton of games where you're trying to figure out, okay, do we have, who are we going to close the game with? There are players right now making an argument and a case, Caruso being one of those guys, he should be in that fourth quarter, deep in the fourth quarter with a couple minutes left. I don't think Kuzma's part of that mix right now. I don't. I actually did this. We did this a little while back. I talked about the closing five. If you guys remember, I kept hitting on the closing five for the Lakers. I didn't have Kuzma in that mix. Matt in Valencia, you're on 710 ESPN. Go ahead, Matt.
Alan, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. Thanks for calling in. Thank you.
Of course, man. It's my about third or fourth time calling in, so I'm actually really liking it. Prior to this, it was the Marcellus and Max show that I was regularly calling into. So it's been a while, but I'm really happy to be kind of communicating with you a little more frequently. So my thoughts here on Kuzma, and you kind of, it's funny, you just literally touched on it. I was going to ask you about your closing five and your thoughts on that. But I'm actually on the same page as you, and here's my reason why, is because Kuzma's strength is obviously scoring. If he's going to be in the closing lineup, he's got to be an effective enough scorer to take the ball away from LeBron and Anthony Davis, and that is a lot in itself. So I don't see Kuzma being a part of that closing lineup regularly unless he has that 1-2 game where he's just super efficient shooting the ball or rebound or playing, you know, defense. But I really don't think it's something that he can learn to be elite at and defense per se, and then just become a part of that closing five lineup.
Matt, I think there's, when you talk about the closing five, and this is a good problem for the Lakers right now. We're talking, actually, I was prepping for the show. We're going to talk Dodgers in a little bit. Kirk Morrison's coming up, and we're going to talk about the NFL. But one of the things I was talking about the Dodgers when we were prepping for the show is, okay, they got an incredible amount of depth. Can that be an issue? The Lakers, they got an incredible amount of depth. Is that going to be an issue? Clippers, kind of similar. You're only going to play five guys at the end, obviously, right? So, who closes games for the Lakers? We'll see. We'll see what happens. But I got to imagine, too, that rotation gets a little bit more it has to at some point get a little tighter just because they don't play typically 10, 11 guys come postseason. You know, it's interesting for the Lakers right now. Tomorrow, if they beat the Memphis Grizzlies, so they go Memphis and New Orleans on back-to-back games, Saturday and Sunday. If they beat Memphis, if they beat Memphis tomorrow, Lakers would be 10-1 in the month of February. How ridiculous is that, by the way? 10-1 in the month of February. They got to go take care of business tomorrow. But if they do that, first of all, that's exactly the win total that Michael Thompson predicted at the start of February. We always do it at the start of the month. I ask MT to predict the month. So he would be right on point if they go 10-1. But then they got a stretch. This stretch of 10 games right now, Memphis, New Orleans, Philly, which was supposed to be a big game, I don't think will be as big now because Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, looks like both those guys won't be playing in that game on Tuesday night, Wednesday night, whatever it is. Friday, the Lakers play the Milwaukee Bucks. Sunday, the Lakers play, this is a week from today and a week from Sunday, they play the Clippers. And then there's a Brooklyn, a Houston, a Denver, a Utah, home and away kind of thrown in the mix. If the Lakers go 7-3 in these next 10 games, how by April 1st do the Lakers not have the Western Conference virtually locked up? I mean, what a difference in strategy the Lakers have had over the Clippers as far as load management and, you know, playing all your players. I think the Lakers can win this thing in a multitude of ways. What I mean by that, you could end up with the best record in the Western Conference. And then you could end up with this luxury, this absolute luxury of playing guys that you want to play and resting them, you know, over the last 2 weeks before the playoffs start. Lakers are set up for something special. I really do believe that. Now, do they got to take care of business, go beat the Bucks and the Clippers in those two games that you have over the course of the next week? Of course, you want to see that. But the way they've set themselves up right now, sitting at 45-12. What a great position for the Lakers to be in. All right, coming up next, Kirk Morrison, 8-year veteran in the NFL, co-host of the Rams pre- and post-game on 710 ESPN. Let's talk about this new collective bargaining agreement that the owners agreed to, the players did not. We'll get his thoughts. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. We got Kirk Morrison, 8-year vet in the league, co-host of the Rams pregame and postgame show on 710 ESPN. Kirk, thanks for taking some time and hopping on, buddy.
Oh, no doubt, Alan. Always a pleasure, my man. How we doing tonight?
Doing good, doing good. Kirk, I thought you'd be the perfect person, you know, as we try and get a little bit more clarity on this new CBA that the NFL and the Players Association, the owners and the Players Association are trying to get figured out. If you don't mind, maybe you can give listeners just a little bit of a background of what's stopping the players from going forward, and then I'll get your personal thoughts on what you think of what's on the table.
Oh, man, it's a lot, really. I think what people have to understand is that there's 32 teams, and then you have what we call a player rep on each team. So that's 32 player reps. Some teams have two, so you may have 64 player reps who basically take the information that they get from the actual Players Association. They bring it back to their respective teammates. They talk about it, and they get votes. And then they go back and share that information, their voting, or how players are feeling, to the executive committee. And so you have so many different branches. It's almost like our own government, right? The U.S. Mm-hmm. government. You have these different branches within the NFLPA and people who have to vote. So it's just a lot really going on. I've been through this process before, Alan, back in 2011, which was the season that did have the lockout. And I'll tell you this, there's a lot of people who, have not attended meetings, who have not really sat down and been a part of negotiations over the last, 18 months to 2 years. And now when there's time to make a decision or a vote, you see some, players with a lot of notoriety saying, I vote no, yet they have not truly been a part of the process. And that's probably the more difficult thing is because people are like, well, this guy's saying no, but they don't understand the concessions and some of the, I would say the give and take in a negotiation that's really been taking place. So, I mean, hopefully that kind of summarizes it up, because if that's really what's going on, the owners have already voted on their actual proposal. But just because the owners agree doesn't mean the players are going to agree.
Sure.
Because there are some things in there that just need to be tweaked. And that's what the Players Association is trying to figure out, some of those tweaks.
Kirk, I know, and these are just the two main sticking points that maybe are more highlighted, and I'm sure there's other things that are extremely important to the players and the owners as well. But what are your thoughts on a 17-game schedule? Just give me your honest opinion on that. I talked to DeMarco Farr, I think, last week, and DeMarco Farr was talking about just how grueling a 16-game schedule is, and then if you're fortunate enough to make it to the postseason, just how tough that is on the body. Your thoughts on a 17-game schedule? You like the idea, or you don't think it's good for the players?
Well, see, there's
a lot of layers.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers. There's active player versus former player. So the active player in me would tell me, no, I don't want 17 games. But yet the former player in me will tell me that a lot of the benefits for former players will be provided by the addition of a 17th game and also a extra team in the wild card or playoff round. Mm-hmm. So that's where some of these concessions by both sides have really come into effect, because we've talked about former player benefits for a long time, right? And so the former player benefits, they will benefit from the actual 17th game. So that's where it's really tough right now, because you have some former players who are really all in, because it doesn't affect them in terms of playing a 17th game, but the 17th game for active players will really help them out when they get into the post-career. Mm. So that's the hard part. But in terms of 17 games, this is what the owners want, right? They want another meaningful game. They want to add more revenue. They want to do away with one preseason game. Do I like it? No, I love the 16, right? With 32 teams in the NFL and 16 games, the eight divisions with four teams each. I'm just mathematically, it just seems that it fits right.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think the owners, they're all about it. They're all about that 17 game. I just think it's inevitable, and I guess we have to figure it out. I think the one question that I raised, though, Alan, and no one really talks about, is that if you go to 17 games, you can definitely kiss the record books goodbye, right?
Mm.
All the records that have been so sacred for so many years will now have to be adjusted, right? Now, like most touchdowns thrown in the season, because with one more game, I could definitely see Patrick Mahomes, passing a Peyton Manning type record, of like 55 touchdowns in the season, because he'll play 17 games where Peyton only played 16. So if someone breaks the rushing record and do it in 17 games, is that the new record, or do we still look at the old record of 16? So I think a lot of records that we hold sacred to the NFL will no longer be spoken of.
Kirk Morrison, 8-year vet in the league, co-host of the Rams pregame and postgame show on 710 ESPN, hopping on the Sliwa show. Kirk, definitely the owners would love a 17th game as they sit in their box,
Correct. Drinking
their martinis, enjoying the beautiful game. But from a player's perspective, it sounds like, look, the game is already so physical. I mean, I have a sympathy towards the players, and I say that because I just don't know how much leverage they have. And maybe this is something that, you could shed some light on. Do the players, these billionaire owners, can sit back and miss a couple checks? And I'm not, sitting here trying to say that, millionaires, I know it's a big difference and sitting in my shoes or whatever the case is, you think of someone as a millionaire, oh my gosh, they're so well off, everything is all good.
Right.
But what kind of leverage do the players have here? I mean, can they do they sit back and hold off? How do you think, things get resolved?
Well, I think things can kind of get resolved. Honestly, I think if the players sit back and definitely go on strike, but I just don't see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the majority of the NFL, people don't understand, are players who are undrafted or in their first, second, or third years, right? You look at a roster, and I always challenge people to do this, go grab a roster or just an NFL team and just look at the years of experience. I mean, you very rarely have guys of 10 plus more years on rosters, right? You see just a mix of guys, right? You have maybe five or six guys who are 10 years or more, or maybe 10 years at least, or you have a bunch who are between years six and that and nine, and then you have a bunch who are 5 years or less. And so with that being said, you really have to understand that that bottom tier of players don't make a ton of money. And so with the 17th game and with the 17th game and with more, you know, younger players, the money will be more for those players.
Sure.
in the later part of the CBA. That's what is going on. The rookie salaries by the end of the CBA will be upwards of over $1 million+, which I can tell you this, when I was a rookie back in 2005, it was nowhere near that. So that's really what people, I think players, the owners realize, is that there will be more money going into the pockets of players, but obviously there's a give and take. Mm-hmm. You have to give, and the give will be giving up one more football game, but I think in the long run, it will be added money to the pockets of a ton of players.
So do you think when it's all said and done, there'll be a 17th game? I think the earliest it could start is 2021. Just your own opinion, do you think a 17th game will eventually be part of the regular schedule for the NFL, or do you think it will stay at 16?
No, I think it'll be 17 games. Mm-hmm. I think that it's just the way that things are just kind of, being talked about, being presented. I just think it's 17 games, but it's a lot of little things that are within it, though, too. Like, there's also the transitioning of a new president of the NFLPA. It used to be Eric Winston, and now they'll have a new president who will be, you know, kind of the voice of the players, right? Kind of how we saw with, remember Derek Fisher?
Oh, yeah.
I think he handed it off to Chris Paul, yep. Right? And we saw what that looked like in the NBA Players Association back in their lockout. And so it'd be similar right now to the NFL, is that you'll have new leadership for the active players. And I don't know if the NFL owners want that, because there are some guys who I know who want to be in that position, and after the voting and things happen, there are some guys who are willing to blow up the deal and start all the way over. Mm. So there's a lot riding on the next, I would say, couple weeks, right? March 18th is the date. That's going to be the date, Alan, that if things aren't done by then, the salary cap will be much different. Mm. You know, teams are also, like the Dallas Cowboys, will have a situation where they can use a franchise tag and a transition tag, right? If you go into the final year of the CBA, without a new deal being made. So there's a lot of little things that we literally can spend a whole entire show on about what can transpire over the next couple of weeks if a deal is not signed by the players.
Well, Kirk, I got a lot of time. We have the whole show. So let's just Kirk Morrison hopping on the Sliwa show. Kirk, I get your thoughts on the 17-game proposed schedule. What do you think of that playoff format? I love the fact that there could be another team that's got a shot at making the postseason. Obviously, 7-7. Each team has a bye on each side. One team on each side has a bye rather than the two that it's been in the past. Do you like the new playoff format being proposed, or would you prefer the old format?
I love the new format.
Yeah, me too.
And I've said it before that this is going to make the NFL more exciting. I think people don't understand what it really helps out. Right, it really helps out. What really drives the popularity of football, in my opinion, is what? Fantasy football. Mm. Right, especially for guys who are playing in the championship and playoff rounds. And I say that because how many teams that we know down the stretch, they've already clinched a playoff spot or number one seed or
sure.
number two seed,
yeah.
and they start the rest players. Well, now with only one true number one seed,
everyone's fighting for
play all the way. Yeah, you're playing all the way through, and especially if you add the 17th game, now you've got another extra week. So you're going to have meaningful games and not have to worry about guys sitting out. So I mean, every game for the season will be so important, and I just love that. And then you have the opportunity for teams to really feel like they're not out of it. I mean, think about the New Orleans Saints this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they lose Drew Brees for a period of time. Now, had they not, got some wins out of Teddy Bridgewater, I mean, they would have loved to have an extra, you know, playoff spot had they not made it, right, to get in. And you would have said, man, I would not want to play the New Orleans Saints after what they went through this year, a couple of injuries, and, you know, now they're in the playoffs. I think it will give just the playoff format three games on that Saturday, three games on that Sunday, wild card weekend. The NFL will dominate for two weekends, well, for the next three weekends in a row. I truly love that format, man, and I think it's going to just do great for the NFL.
Kirk, I love it too. You know, how about just the month of December? You know, if you're a team on the outside looking in, or you're barely hanging on for that final playoff spot, like, how much more is exciting for three, four now cities that are got a shot to make the postseason? I know that's the case right now, but you're adding another team. I think it makes week 14, 15, 16. I mean, the entire month of December, you can almost say these are all playoff games, because many of these teams, they got to win to get in. That also, is, to me, is part of the excitement. It's not even just the playoff part. It's leading up to the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's totally kind of how I'm in it, right? It's just like now everyone will be in the hunt, all right? You know, you see that they put that graphic up. It's the leaders of the divisions, and then you have that one column all the way to the right, in the hunt. Now
right.
You'll have a lot more teams in the hunt. And as a fan base, fans will be more excited to watch, right? I said the fantasy football aspect. You'll be more excited to know that, you know, your MVP of the season won't be sitting out week 17. He'll be playing, right? So there's just so many different layers to this one that I love about it. But adding that playoff game is going to be, I think, huge. I think it's just really going to do well. I said it before. People are like, well, it's going to water down the playoffs. I was like, dude, we still watch a 16 seed versus a 1 seed, you know, in the NCAA tournament. We know who's going to win, but it's just you never know. But we still watch it. It's not watered down. The NCAA tournament still brings in huge numbers, and I think Wild Card Weekend will still do the same. Now we got an extra weekend, and now you have an extra game, and now you have a reason to just tell people, leave me alone Saturday and Sunday.
Look, no NFL fan, I don't care where you live across the country, would have been disappointed to see the Rams get in and the Steelers get in, which would have, you know, happened. This new format, if it was implemented
right.
This past, everybody would have been watching. So I'm with you. I don't believe that at all. Kirk, appreciate you taking some time on a Friday night to hop on the Sliwa Show. Thank you very much, man. Enjoy your weekend, okay?
All good, man. Appreciate the time, Alan, always.
All right, that's a good man right there, Kirk Morrison. Always appreciate him joining the show. Coming up next, we'll talk some Dodgers baseball. Dodgers 4-2 in spring training. They lost earlier today 6-5 to the Brewers. Kershaw took the mound. Alex Wood took the mound. We'll kind of break down their results on their first action so far in spring training. And then Tim Kirchen, writer for ESPN, does everything baseball, had some very, very positive comments about the Dodgers, specifically Mookie Betts. We'll get into that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.